Hour three of Overdrive on TSN 2 now, on TSN 1050, on the app and on your home speakers. Gord Miller sitting in for Brian Hayes, who's under the weather today, with Jamie McLennan and Jeff O'Neill. We're going to talk to Pierre LeBrun in a minute, our TSN hockey insider, and we'll talk to Leo Routens, our Raptors analyst, about what's going on with them. They got a tough loss last night to Utah. We were talking before the break about the Montreal Canadiens, and we'll ask Pierre LeBrun about this. You know, there's a big outcry a couple weeks ago because the CEO of Air Canada doesn't speak French. And it was pretty clear he tried it and couldn't do it. And there was,
right,
you know, the federal government said he should, and there was a lot of statements about that. The language of the NHL is English. Like, when you make trade, now, I guess if you were bilingual and you called Julien Brisebois in Tampa, I guess you could speak French, but all the paperwork, everything's done in English. The team is coached in English. You deal with your American League team in English. I'm not sure it's a prerequisite that the coach or the manager, sorry, speaks English.
Don't you
speaks
think
French,
the fans, sorry, of the Montreal Canadiens would disagree whenever you're addressing?
I think the fans of the Montreal Canadiens want a team to... Now, you're right. I wonder how much of it is media-driven. I remember seeing Marc Bergevin last year. They had just qualified for the playoffs. Okay? They just made the playoffs. They had Carey Price was out, Weber was out, Brendan Gallagher was out, and they somehow got into the playoffs. And the story the next day, one of the top stories the next day, was they had no Quebecers in their lineup.
Yeah.
And this week, the Premier of Quebec wants to launch a thing to get more NHL players from Quebec. I get that cultural bit of it.
But how about just being good?
I don't care where the players are from. I don't care where the coach is from. I don't care what language the coach speaks, what language the manager speaks. There's 32 teams.
Sure, and I'm sure if you brought in a guy named Rick Flynn, who had a mustache and did not speak French, and they started winning every night, maybe they wouldn't care.
Well,
but you know it, Gord. It's a big deal there.
But some people would care because there would be some noisy people. There would be some noisy people who would make a fuss about it.
Well,
but those noisy people make a fuss about everything. All I'm saying is that if you're trying to win, at least put yourself on an equal footing with the other 32 teams and hire who you think is the best person. Now, if that person happens to speak French, great. I'm not saying you're precluding French-speaking people, but I think the goal here should be just be good.
Well, I understand that, but I think, and I should not be speaking on this because I don't, you know, what I mean is, and
why?
I'm showing respect on this.
Yeah, I am
because
too.
Because what I'm saying is I don't have the deep knowledge of, you know, Francophone roots, so it means something there to that culture, to that heritage, all of that, that I don't, from the other outside, Gord, you're admitting, I'm admitting too, I don't understand as much. I would prefer a winner for a market other than just having to, if you're looking at a for example, a talent pool, you're cutting it in half if some of that talent doesn't speak that particular language,
in
but
half.
It's important to
in
the
half.
Heritage. Okay, in a quarter. My point is if it's that important, and not only just to the fan base, but to the fabric of that organization, because Jeff Molson might want that for his organization too.
Yeah.
I'm not privy to that knowledge. That's why I was like, we need to ask somebody who's around that situation, because this conversation isn't the first when it comes to the Montreal Canadiens and pro sports teams in that area. That's not the first conversation. We're not groundbreaking here. It's just I know Randy Cunningworth took over as a head coach there, and that was like the first question. He's like, hey, I'm trying to learn, and you know, all of that type of stuff. It's very important to that
it is important to some elements of that culture, for sure.
Fair enough. Yes,
to some elements of that culture. But I don't know, there's lots of qualified French Canadians, there's lots of qualified people who speak French, but they all have other jobs.
Well,
you know, Julien Brisebois ain't leaving Tampa to go be the GM of the Montreal Canadiens.
No, I really don't believe that's the case.
Right, so
that
I mean,
it's not happening.
So
no, you're right. Like if it was Rick from, you know, wherever, Oshawa, and the guy was super smart and, you know, could deliver a winner, would that be acceptable? I don't know. That's a question, not a statement. You know, would it be acceptable if a guy was brilliant and, like, for example, Steve Yzerman became available?
Yeah.
Right? Steve Yzerman is known as one of the best young managers in the league, correct?
Yeah. Like, so you would say no to Steve Yzerman?
I don't know. I'm not saying no to him. I'm saying would that be acceptable in that situation? I don't know. I don't.
Well, wasn't
have that
there talk
answer.
Of Mike Babcock? Like, he, apparently his dream job is the Montreal Canadiens, or it was, or just yeah. that was floating about.
Right.
Like
he lived
I don't
there.
Know.
He went to McGill.
Yeah.
You know, he lived
Does
there.
He speak French?
No. Don't believe so.
Well, he might. I mean,
I don't think it's conversational. He barely speaks English.
I took 8 years of French in school out west, and you know it's a struggle. You can understand a little bit of it, but you can't be conversational.
You know who we should ask about this?
Who?
We should talk to the man joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, Pierre LeBrun.
Yes, absolutely.
Bonjour.
What's going on?
Bonjour, Pierre.
Ça va, les amis?
Ça va. Let me ask you the question we were just talking about. Does the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens have to speak French?
I think so. I mean, I think of the two positions, I think it's probably even more important for the head coach to be French-Canadian or speak French anyway.
Then what's the importance element, Pierre? I mean, as far as the winning and losing goes on the ice, what is the importance? Is it the fan base,
well,
the interviews, or where is the importance
Yeah, I
lie?
Mean, I think the head coach in particular is the guy that or the person that every day you know, communicates on behalf of the organization to the fan base, which a large segment of which is French. And, you know, the Habs aren't your everyday NHL team. They're a cultural icon. They're part of the fabric of Quebec that is different. It's why the language, the culture matters a lot. I mean, I think that if there was, you know, a GM whose first language wasn't French, who is clearly one of the best in the league and suddenly was available, I think Habs fans could live with that. Again, going back to your point, old dog, about winning. But I think all things being equal, you know, you want to have both the French-speaking GM and head coach if possible. And there are lots of good candidates to go around. I mean, I heard your segment earlier, guys. And again, who knows what happens now with Mark Bergevin, whose contract expires at the end of the year. As you guys know, I had a chance to interview with him today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read that article. But, yeah, it's pretty candid stuff there, Pierre.
Yeah, I thought he, you know, I really do think that, and I give him credit too, because I think that, you know, he's done this, he's had a couple of news conferences this year when with the fire burning. He doesn't hide when things are rough. Right. And I reached out to the organization today to talk with him, and he obliged. And his day got worse because about half an hour after we were done our interview, he got the news from the team that he had tested positive for COVID. So my goodness. So we wish him the best with that. I just want to make a point that in general, I was just thinking of this as Sidney Crosby's recovering from COVID and scored his first goal last night in Montreal. I'm guilty of this, so I'm not trying to anyone else. I'm just saying we're all guilty to a degree that people in sports who have COVID were like, well, everyone's vaccinated and they're in great shape. You know, we don't spend much time thinking about it anymore, but I really do say it. I hope Mark Bergevin's okay and the symptoms aren't too bad.
Yeah, 100%.
Because he has COVID. But when I asked him about his future, you know, I felt like if you read between the lines, one is that he felt it's not affecting his day-to-day job, that he communicates almost every day, he said, with Chuck Wilson about what he's doing with the team, and he says, quote, it's business as usual. But when I said, like, listen, we're almost December and you don't have an extension, it's hard for me, looking from the outside in, not to feel like this is your last season, that when your deal expires, you're going to move on, or the team's going to move on from you. And he answered, it's hard to say, quote unquote. He says, it's a great question. I try not to think about it. And at the end of the column in The Athletic, I thought he kind of tipped his hand a bit. We just talked about how during the playoffs last year, whenever they clinched a series, how emotional he got, he'd be hugging the players, you know. And you know, my point is that cuts two ways. The emotions are amazing when you're on a run to the Stanley Cup final, but they're also tough on a guy like him when they're so terrible like they are right now. And he said, yeah, that's true. He says, you know, an emotional guy. I care for the organization. I'm quoting him here. I've been working here 9+ years. It's something I take to heart. And until my last day, I will do the same. So that felt a bit, and that was our last, like we ended the interview after that, but it felt like, I think reality is setting in here. And I could be wrong. I mean, listen, Jeff Molson, I guess in the new year could come to him with an offer that makes sense and maybe they do an extension, but it sure feels to me like this is the last year. And you know what? 10 years at the helm of the Montreal Canadiens, mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that it's not time to move on, no matter what their record says. That's a high-pressure job, I'm just saying, from a mental health perspective.
Well, I think the other thing, too, is, I mean, look how far they've fallen. I mean, this is, I mean, it's... This is a tire fire right now, is it not, Pierre? Like when you, I mean, they were not competitive. They were not competitive last night at all.
No, and I will tell you that was the first time in a bit that I felt that way about them. That first of all, right now they're not putting out a lineup that's good enough to win most nights anyway. But at least I saw evidence for a number of games where they were losing 3-2 or whatever, where the effort was there. And to me, the season had begun. As long as Nick Suzuki keeps progressing, and he has. Romanoff keeps getting more and more ice time. Like, the season becomes about those guys, right? But last night was terrible. And it was a complete no-show. And I could tell in Bergevin's voice today that affected him. Like, as he says, he can live with, you know, you lose to a better team who has a better goalie right now. Of course, the Habs are missing their goalie. And as long as the effort's there, he can lose. He can live with some of the losses. But last night, was really unacceptable for Mark Bergevin. And I suspect without him telling me that, you know, there was a bit of a powwow there in the organization after last night's loss. And, you know, I'll just pass on some of the comments he made. He was really open today. I mean, he said, you know, quote, "It's hard to watch when the team that was so good for 2.5 months in the playoffs falls so flat on its face from the beginning of the season. It's hard to comprehend." I mean, he had a lot of comments like that where he really isn't pulling punches. It's just, I mean, he understands that without Price and Joel Edmondson and Shea Weber and others that they're not the same team. But he says it still does not justify where they are, that he believes they are a better team than what they're showing right now. So a lot of frustration there.
Yeah, Pierre, I wanted to talk about the young players and the guy like Caulfield, who, you know, they send to the minors, they bring him back up. You know, did you believe that was the right move to get him out of that situation just based on, you know, how toxic things were going and, you know, Bergevin just kind of giving him a reset and getting him out of there and bring him back when things, not that they've died down, but he's not the focus night in and night out?
I did think at the time that it was the right move to send it down. And the fact, a couple of days before it happened, I had no intel, but I was working that game on our Habs regional. It was the weekend where they played afternoon games, Saturday, Sunday in LA and Anaheim, and got dismantled in both. And during the Saturday intermission, the Saturday afternoon, I think it was Glenn Sheeler and I said, you know, this guy only has one assist. His confidence looks shaken. I think that a trip to Laval would be good for him. And I remember that. A few Habs fans took offense to that. Some agreed, some didn't. And then it happened. They did set him down. And I think clearly he was forcing things. He was trying to beat three guys. He was lacking confidence. And I thought last night he had that burst. I mean, obviously, as a team, they were terrible. But the few moments that he had the puck on his stick, I think he looked confident and was willing to make moves. So I think the timing is right for him to be back. Now, your concern with all the young guys on this team is the toxicity of a season like this dragging on if they don't start to play better, and what it does to a young player's confidence. Like, you know, is this where they should be if it's that kind of atmosphere every day? So again, there are different ways to lose, and if they can find another gear, then it's fine for young players to develop. You know, the other guy that I thought, it was his first NHL game, talk about an atmosphere for your first NHL game, 6-0 loss, but Matthias Nylander looked all right to me last night in his first ever game for the Habs. Puck-moving D, a really good skater. I don't think he's going to be a big offensive player for them on the back end, but he looked really poised in the minutes I saw him play. And again, what's best for him now? Because they have a weird, Gordon would know this from all the international agreements, the Swedish Ice Hockey Federation has a unique agreement with the NHL, which was written up a couple of years ago, where a guy his age, if you're not using him on your NHL team by a certain date, you got to send him back to his club team in Sweden. So it'd be interesting to feel, if you're Mark Bergevin, I didn't ask him this today, there are bigger things to tackle, but what's best for his development now? I mean, you can get lots of ice time here if you realize you're not making the playoffs, but the atmosphere around it, is it better that he goes back for another year for Linda, I wonder. Mm-hmm.
Pierre, before we get into the dumpster fire in Vancouver, let's talk about the hottest team in the NHL, the Leafs. Kind of business as usual, getting everybody back on board. What are your thoughts?
Well, one thing that I love seeing from the Leafs right now is they're winning a lot of low-scoring games. And, you know, I talked to a rival team executive about this today from the West, about, you know, we're going around the league like I tend to do with these guys, and we talked about the Leafs, and he goes, that's a good sign. You know, it's not freewheeling hockey, comfortable in their skin in the 2-1 game. They've had a bunch this year. And, you know, it probably should have been more than 2-1 last night. I thought the Leafs were pretty dominant, but I think that is a good sign because the hockey is different come playoff time. And, you know, you guys have talked about this so much, especially, you know, you Noodles and you Dog with A's. It's a test for them to have to get through all these months before getting ultimately to where we're really going to judge them, right? And that's not easy, but that can easily go the other way.
Right.
Yep. So it's not nothing that they're playing well and playing at the level they're playing, because there is an added layer of pressure, in my opinion, anyway. And reminds me of the years Washington had to go through every year. Like, yeah. I don't care how many President's trophies the Capitals would win. We all knew what the conversation would be. So I credit the Leafs that you really got to dig down now and completely block out the fact that everyone's waiting for your first playoff game and focus on the task at hand. And that's what they're doing big time.
I'm shocked, by the way. We're talking to Pierre LeBrunner, an NHL insider. I'm shocked that O didn't bring up the best team in the NHL. With an 867 winning percentage, the Carolina Hurricanes with a big win last night.
They win
night.
Every night, man. They just big,
win, big win in Anaheim last night. Like, they're good.
Yeah, they're legit, well, too.
Thanks to O, I have a Hartford Whalers sign in my background, my home studio, which I'm going to use on RDS and talking tonight on TV. The Hurricanes are unreal. I mean, they lose Dougie Hamilton and they don't even blink.
No, they're, and Freddie Anderson's been great. I do want to mention, O, you brought it up a moment ago. Vancouver, like it's getting ugly there.
Yeah, and I mentioned this, you know, on That's Hockey last night, and it's anecdotal, so you got to be careful. It's not scientific, but, and this is before the Habs laid another one last night, a really bad one. But as bad as things are in Montreal, what I'm perceiving, and you guys can tell me, I think the level of angst and anger among the fan base is higher in Vancouver than it is in Montreal. Now, is that because the Habs have some legitimate excuses with Carey Price out and everything else? Is it because that those Habs fans that want a GM change know that Mark Bergevin's deal's up at the year? Whereas none of those conditions existed in the Vancouver equation. I mean, you can't really look at injuries and say, well, this is why this is happening. And you guys can disagree, but I feel the level is higher in Vancouver right now from the fan base. And, you know, I don't want to pick on one player because I think that's totally a team thing right now going on with that team. But Elias Pettersson hasn't looked like himself for a while now.
Been bad. You know, he's had some real tough nights, like not just not scoring, but giving the puck away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you, Pierre, as far as maybe Vancouver fans being even a little more heated than Montreal. Like, Montreal's fans got and experienced the finals last year. Mm-hmm. Then, at the start of the year, you know, they've got the built-in excuse. No Carey Price. They're on their third or fourth goaltender or fourth string goaltender playing games with the injury to Jake Allen. You know, no Shea Weber, Hoffman. We just talked about it, like it not going well. Vancouver has all their players, if I'm not mistaken. Like, they're, you know, that's their team for the most part. I know they've had a few injuries and guys in and out, but for the most part, the guys that are making the money on that group are playing. Like, they're playing tonight against the Winnipeg Jets. So, you know, I think that's where the fan base might differ is, you know, Montreal's got some built-in excuses, whether you use them or not, where Vancouver's like, what the hell's going on here? We've got everybody in the lineup, and now they're aiming it at Jimmy Benning and roster construction. They're aiming it on Travis Green. Can't get the most out of these players. How about the players take some responsibility, too?
Yeah, and to me, that's got to be part of looking at the whole picture there in Vancouver. But, I didn't think they were going to be world beaters this year, but I thought they would contend for a playoff spot. So they've been a pretty big disappointment to me again because they don't have any injuries. And where do you go from here? You know, Jim Benning has this year next on his deal. Travis Green just signed an extension. I just point these things out because I know that it's clear what the Canucks fan base wants. And I guess I'll bring something up that doesn't get brought up a lot in Canadian markets because I don't think we're used to bringing it up. But NHL owners have gone through the pandemic here, and money is money. And I'm just telling you that it's not to say that ultimately Jim Benning won't lose his job or Travis Green, but the fact that they both have some term on their deals is not nothing when you're an owner these days, I'm telling you. And you know, like why was Mark Bergevin not signed to an extension this offseason? The only thing I can come up with, and obviously he wouldn't talk about it and no one else has in the organization, is that they didn't see eye to eye on the finance, on the number.
And to be honest with you, Pierre, and I see it behind the scenes at games, teams have cut way back on all the stuff you don't see. Like, they're still paying the players, they got the coaches, but behind the scenes, these teams took a lot of losses last year, and they've cut back. You can see there aren't nearly as many people working behind the scenes as there used to be. So I'm not
accusing Francisco Aquilini of anything. I'm just pointing out that does he, in this very moment, feel like paying two GMs and two coaches?
That's a fair question.
I say no, but something has to give there. Like, I don't think Jimmy Benning's going to lay in traffic for Travis Green. So, ultimately, it might be the scenario where the coach gets it before the manager, but the manager is going to get it because eventually people realize that the roster is not, you know, constructed to contend, quite frankly.
And it looked like a couple of years ago they might. You know, they had that good run in the bubble, but maybe that was a blip. You know, Demko was really good that year in the playoffs. Really good.
I know we got to run, but I was thinking about this the other day, about Canadian markets and when we get excited about teams. And then, you know, Ottawa, was it 2017? Ottawa went to the conference final and went overtime goal away from the cup final.
Yep.
And look at every single thing that happened right after that moment for the Senators. And hey, from Senators fans right now, I'm pretty excited about, you know, the young talent I have. I'm just saying they're one goal away from the cup final, and then all the roster deconstruction happened and the drama happened after that. You know, Vancouver, you just mentioned, Final Four and everything that's happened since, Montreal Cup Final. I'm just saying, I hope it's not a curse now that if you're a Canadian team and you go deep in the playoffs, that all hell's going to break loose the following year.
Well, you know what, though? Fans in some of these markets, and including this one, will take their chances on that. They'll take a deep playoff run and roll the dice on that. That's Pierre LeBrun. Thanks for talking to us. Pierre LeBrun, join us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota, Maple Toyota. Pre-orders are now available for all models, including the all-new 2022 Tundra and Corolla Cross. Visit MapleToyota.com.